If winter is for pessimists, all gray and cold and bleak, then summer certainly is season for sunny dispositions. In August, though, the publishing business has seemed frozen, as if in mid-January. The source of the polar vortex, of course, is the ongoing slugfest between Amazon and Hachette. Welcome to Copyright Clearance and its podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally of Beyond the Book. The book world can hardly expect a heat wave anytime soon, yet it ought to perk up from several items of heartwarming news this week, including a poll that finds 3 out of 4 Americans say that reading is an important part of my life. With a look at the bright side, Andrew Albany, senior writer of Publishers Weekly, joins me now as he does every Friday. So welcome to Beyond the Book, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
Well, this is an episode, at least, where people are going to have a smile on their face throughout most of it, because while it's been a quiet week, relatively speaking, on the Amazon-Hachette battlefront, this gives us a chance to look at some other things and a way to sort of taking the pulse of the publishing industry, and we find out things are pretty good. In fact, on Monday in PW, you're looking at the supply side, the authors.
That's right. With Monday's issue, we will have what is now a quarterly supplement on MFA writing programs. Now, our listeners may recall that we did our first MFA feature a couple of months ago, and it got a tremendous response and a great readership. And so we've decided to make it a regular supplement. I think we're probably going to do them quarterly. And I think that's fantastic for a number of reasons. First of all, as you mentioned, for all the talk that we've had about the competition for readers' attention in the digital age with games and video and multimedia, when you look, there's huge growth in these writing programs around the country. So you know that there is no slowdown in the number of people who actually want to write. And if people are investing time and money in training as writers, I think that's a pretty good indicator for the future of reading, and thus for the future of publishing, one would think, too. And the second part of that, too, is that, people are really seeking to not only write, but to write well. This idea of dedicating themselves to going to school, to studying the craft of writing, is gaining more and more popularity. There's more and more programs at a number of universities. And also, there's a lot more innovation in these programs. So while we tend to look at, the Amazon-Hachette battle and the struggles among other retailers as an indicator of the book business's health, I think this is one vital sign that we should not ignore.
Well, it's a really great point, Andrew, and authors in particular have been responsible for another bright side of things in publishing, which is the self-publishing revolution, which has seen tremendous growth in the last couple of years. And also in this same issue coming out of Publishers Weekly, you've got PW Select, which is dedicated to self-publishing.
Yes. And again, I think that the success of PW Select, which has in turn become the driver of a new venture here called Book Life, it's a free offering for independent and self-published writers. I think there's a lot of reason to be excited about where the book business is going, both with self-publishing and independent publishers, whatever you want to call them now. For weeks now, again, it's been Amazon, Hachette, and this battle of corporate titans is being pitched as sort of the battle for the soul of the book business. But really not so much. And you and I have talked before about the way that the major publishing is going. That is, the big five publishers, how it's become sort of a hits-driven business. And I know I've said this before, but I think it bears repeating that, I feel like with technology and the ability now for a writer to reach a reader, that we are on the cusp of sort of a golden age of independent publishing. Yes, the majors and Amazon dominate the headlines week after week. And this week I saw one industry commenter wish aloud that, maybe Google and Ingram would put together a partnership that could compete with Amazon. And we also learned that Barnes & Noble and Samsung are partnering for a new tablet. But, I'm really not looking to these big players to sort of make the big changes in the publishing industry. My message, I guess, would be that, try not to overlook or underestimate the ability of the small independent thinkers to bring about the really meaningful change, because I think history shows us that's where the greatest change always comes from.
Well, indeed. But, when it comes to change, and not small change at all, you've got a Q&A this week with an author who is, if we can say this, a traditional figure in publishing. The debut author who makes it big. And you spoke with Matthew Thomas, whose first book, We Are Not Ourselves, was published just this week. Tell us his story.
Yeah, you're right. It's not small change at all. In fact, it's quite big change. So yes, the author's name is Matthew Thomas. He's a debut author. And last fall, he sold his first book to Simon & Schuster for seven figures. That's right. You're hearing me right. A literary fiction debut that sold for $1 million. Virtually unheard of these days, right? You know, the book is called We Are Not Ourselves. It's an Irish-American family saga, which, you know, by the way, received a starred review from PW, and the other reviews thus far have been very strong, too. You know, but here's the thing about his story. You know, I sat down for coffee with Matthew Thomas, who lives here in the New York area, and I found personal story to be just remarkable. He went to two writing programs, one at Johns Hopkins and one at Cal Irvine. He worked for 10 years on the book alone, all the while he was working as a school teacher. And he wrote almost the entire 640-page book by hand. He filled up pages and pages of notebooks because he found that it gave him this locomotive energy that allowed him to finish a draft. While he was typing, he would keep editing. And you know, he just really wanted to get the end of a draft. So he went over and decided he would just write it by hand. You know, all the while, he never pitched an agent or mailed off pieces. He just worked on the book alone for 10 years with nobody reading over his shoulder. And he's only 39 years old now. So that's from, you know, his mid-20s until last fall, counting his time in writing programs. Last fall, when he finally secured this $1 million publishing deal, this is a man who really exemplifies what the writing life requires, the sort of singular focus and dedication to doing the work. And so I'm actually in the middle of still reading the book right now, as is my wife. We're actually kind of reading it together. We're both really enjoying it. But to my mind, this is such a great story about craft, and the dedication that he shows makes it worth every penny. And you can read the whole Q&A in Monday's issue of PW.
Well, I look forward to checking that out, because it gives even a preternaturally pessimistic Irishman cause for putting a smile on his face. A debut author, a literary author, seven figures. Terrific stuff. Meanwhile, we've also mentioned that there was a deal announced this week between Barnes & Noble and Samsung, and this leaves us raising some questions that we haven't considered recently, which is, whatever happened to the Nook?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I had dinner this week with two close friends, and you know, one of them is a reporter for a major newspaper, and another is an author and an editor at a major magazine. And you know, we started talking about this Amazon stuff, and suddenly they asked, you know, whatever happened to the Nook? Is that just gone? And I think therein lies the real problem for Barnes & Noble, that you know, they're already sort of dead and buried among a good section of the public, I think. You know, but let's back up for our listeners who may have missed the news this week. The news is, of course, that Barnes & Noble and Samsung announced a partnership on a tablet device, the new Galaxy Tab 4 Nook. Just rolls off the tongue like Kindle, doesn't it? Now, it's going to sell for around $179. The device allows consumers to sort of log into a Nook page that saves title recommendations. There's also free in-store customer service and tech support as well. So, and there's also free in Barnes & Noble Wi-Fi. So I think that's, you know, kind of a nice little thing to have. And Barnes & Noble is also launching the new Samsung Nook device with a promotional offer that includes $200 worth of free content, including books, movies, TV shows, magazines. You know, I wish them luck with this, and it's good to see them back in the tablet game. We talked a bit about the Nook at the end of last year when they announced that they were sort of getting out of the tablet business beginning of this year. You know, but what's notable to me is that at the press conference, BNN CEO Michael Huseby discussed the recent survey, results of a recent survey that Barnes & Noble had done. Among those findings, 77% of the survey agreed that reading is an important part of their life. 44% said that, you know, their reading had actually increased due to access to books on their smartphones or tablets or reading device. And those are really good numbers. But, you know, time will tell what those numbers are going to mean for Barnes & Noble and how a Samsung deal on this new tablet device is going to help them. I have to tell you, as you might guess, I'm still pretty concerned that 100% of my dinner guests this week didn't know that BNN was still in the ebook game. So I think that they're going to have to make quite an effort to get back to par here.
Indeed. And, you know, while it's been a pretty sunny week all the way around, there are some clouds, of course, and those clouds come to us from the direction of court, and you were back in a courtroom again this week. You're a regular visitor there, and the case is the Apple case. What's going on there?
You're right. I am a regular visitor there, so much so that the security guards, when I go through the metals detectors, know who I am now. So that shows me that I'm spending a little too much time.
I hope they still check you, though.
They do. They do. So that's right. I was back in court. You know, Apple and the big five publishers are beginning to fight a new front in their ebook price fixing case. And this is an antitrust suit filed by three upstart ebook retailers. We've talked a bit about it on this show. These retailers claim that their businesses, which were based on price competition, were destroyed when Apple and the publishers entered their illegal conspiracy. So, you know, after this conference, we're still waiting a final schedule for the trial and how that litigation is going to play out. Last week's conference was largely about that schedule. You can read my report on it on the PW website. And I think the only real news to come out of court was that Judge Denise Coates said she was going to order the parties into mediation. But when I got back and started reading through the documents, there was one really interesting twist in this case that is worth pointing out. In essence, the plaintiff's entire case rests on the evidence and the liability finding that was delivered in the Department of Justice and the state's ebook cases against Apple and the publishers. That's both the investigation and the Apple trial. So while this new litigation is now underway, if the appeals court throws out or reverses Apple's liability finding, well, since this new case is based so much on that, game over, right? You think that this case would falter too, but not necessarily. In fact, some lawyers have told me that if Coates' liability finding against Apple is reversed, the retailer case could actually become something of a do-over of sorts. That is, the retailer's attorneys, without having a liability finding already to rest on, could actually go back and seek to establish liability in their own action, which means that this could drag on a little longer. Now, the publishers and Apple have scoffed at this case from the beginning. They're calling it basically a Me Too case. They're portraying it as something of a shakedown. And Judge Cote herself has noted that for these upstart retailers, very small companies, proving that they were actually damaged by this is also going to be an extreme challenge for them. Nevertheless, given the potential for this case to become a bigger headache and to actually keep the price-fixing case alive, even if the appeals court throws it out in Apple's case, just seems like this has settlement written all over it. So just something to watch out for in the coming months.
Well, indeed. Thank you for that, Andrew. And listen, to cap off a report of good news, I've got some more good news.
Please share.
Well, I will indeed. Listen, I'm going to give you and Jeremy Brisky the week off next week.
Hey, I like weeks off.
All right. Well, that's because I'm taking the week off. I'm going to take a little bit of vacation. And so we will skip our report on Friday next week. Well, we will be back in the first week of September. And we'll kick off a season that will take us back to Frankfurt Book Fair in October. And I'm sure a very busy time for the book business. So, Andrew Albanese, we appreciate you joining us today. And we'll be talking to you in 2 weeks' time.
My pleasure. And if you're looking for a book to read on vacation, We Are Not Ourselves, Irish American Family Saga, great book for a vacation.
Well, indeed, great recommendation. I look forward to that. I know something about Irish American families.
I know you do.
Indeed. Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow us on Twitter, find Beyond the Book on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at beyondthebook.com. Our engineer and co-producer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.